Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men, or men who consider themselves bisexual, or asexual, or metrosexual, or nonsexual. Each week, my co-host is Misty Hall, and I discuss the issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So, good evening, everyone, and good evening, Misty. How are you?
Good evening, Bonnie. Doing wonderful. How are you today?
I'm doing good, too. We want to wish a happy Mother's Day to all of our mothers who are listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know this is a tough holiday for some women. And, in fact, I'm writing this in my newsletter that will be going out in 2 days, you know, even though it's after Mother's Day today. But, you know, I don't think we think about it often enough on Mother's Day how important a holiday that is for our women because of the fact that so many of them become single parents.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about that in a little while. But I do want to remind our listeners that next week, I'm really excited, we're going to have our guest Wendy from Wendy's List. And I'll be sending out a new list that Wendy made up in the upcoming newsletter that goes out, you know, in 2 days. And if you're not on my newsletter list and you would like to be on it, just drop me a note at bonk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to add you to that mailing list. Also, on June 10th, I'm really excited, Misty, I just found this out yesterday, that Patsy Ray Dawson is going to be our guest.
Cool.
And she's always really interesting from the Christian point of view on
mm-hmm.
why women who have gay husbands should feel no guilt or no remorse about leaving them because it's not the kind of marriage that women need to be in. And also during the month of June, it's our month that I like to focus on men, gay
mm-hmm.
husbands, and trying to, you know, get some kind of understanding going there. So we'll also have Dr. Brian Hooper come back as our guest. And we'll probably have a couple of other men on there also. So, as I mentioned before, we have a good upcoming month. But I did want to talk about subject because I was talking to one of our support group members earlier, and hopefully she's able to get this broadcast. So hello to you, Lisa, if you're able to tune in tonight or, you know, the next day or two to hear the recast of this program. And Lisa, you know, is very upset about something, and I don't blame her. The only thing is that I really understand it better now. This is something new for her. She's been married for over 25 years. And, you know, her marriage came to an end. And, you know, it was sometime within this past year. And Lisa said to me that she can't understand why she's not getting the support that she feels she deserves in this situation and that people are just feeling more sympathetic to her husband than to her. And have you seen that happen, Misty?
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen that happen. I have so many names of clients come to mind right now with that statement. It's very common. It's got its good points and its bad points. Good points is, you know, people do understand, I think, being gay a little better. I think, it, you know, being people being a little more compassionate, that's a great point. The bad point is the straight spouse is devastated. They need that support. When I went through this same situation, getting divorced, 12 years ago now, I didn't know you at the time. You were doing support, but that was before my time on Google, and I knew too much about Google. I couldn't find anyone, could not find anyone. And that was the day before Amazon.com, before I could even find a book that might even relate to it. Couldn't find any books in bookstores that I went to. It's very difficult, and I hear it often. I've had several clients that, you know, the friends really just say things like, oh, you know, and give their sympathy to the gay spouse and just, like, brush over the straight spouse. You know, they're heartbroken, too. Just because you're straight doesn't don't have any damage, don't.
And a lot of times you don't get the support first from the friends, then from the family. You know, a lot of times the families are thinking, because people still don't understand this whole situation, that, well, they weren't gay when they married you. How come they're gay now? Where did you screw up in the marriage? Mm-hmm. You know, and believe it or not, people still think that way today.
Yes,
and
they do.
As
common.
I was telling Lisa, I said, you have to really relate it back to a movie that many of us have seen, Brokeback Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see that movie, Misty?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't seen the whole thing through.
Okay. Well, I saw the whole thing through once. And, you know, the movie really upset me. Because of the
fact... I lived it. I didn't think I needed the movie. I lived it, you know.
Yeah, well, I felt compelled to see it because when people would ask me about it, you know, I felt I had to have an answer for them. I didn't have any particular interest in seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one thing I did learn is that within this movie, that people were not sympathetic at all to the wives.
Mm-hmm.
They were not portrayed as being sympathetic characters or figures. They were portrayed more as being, you know, like stupid or, mm-hmm. you know, like blind, or that they knew and couldn't accept it. You know, there, like I say, there was nothing really sympathetic about the women in this story. And I said that to Lisa. I said, you know what? A lot of times people just don't have the sympathy for this. And she was saying, well, there has to be a way that we can make people more aware of straight wives and what we go through. And I kind of came down, I kind of figured it out with her on the phone, and I said, look, unless the situation really affects you, nobody's that interested in hearing about it. You know, maybe they'll listen once because, you know, they're a good friend, or they'll listen once or twice because they're a good family member, but they're not making it their, you know, their particular cause.
No.
You know, it's your issue, not theirs. And
exactly.
I said, it's the same way that I can think of a million good issues that are out there. You know, children who have cancer, women with mm-hmm. breast cancer, children who were abused. I mean, we could think of so many good causes. And, you know, yeah, I'll contribute to some of them. You know, when my, you know, I can't contribute to everyone that comes to me, but, you know, I contribute a lot, you know, to every, I try to even it out. But my point is, other than giving a donation, I'm really not that interested because it doesn't affect my life.
Right.
And I think that part of it is that. Part of it is that people, okay, they'll listen to you the first time, but they don't want to keep listening because it's not their life. And I think also people don't like people who are victims. And I think a lot of us tend to feel like we are victims, namely because in many ways we are, you know, initially when we find out. But you have to get past that victim role at some point because, you know, if you just are trying to evoke sympathy from people, they don't want to hear it after a while. You know, they're tired of hearing it because it's not what, it doesn't affect them. It's just affecting you. So I don't know. Do you agree with that or no?
I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think that, excuse me, there's also been, even though there's so much prejudice and so many horrible things that happen to gay people today, there's still a big movement where people are more compassionate with gay people. They're more aware of gay issues. So I think some of that has created some of the people being more sympathetic to gay people.
Maybe younger.
I think that's
maybe younger.
A role in it. Well,
but I don't see this happening with the older generation. It's like a friend of mine told me the other day at work that he has a cousin who's in his 50s who finally came out to his father, who's 80 years old. And the father has a very thriving business
mm-hmm.
and in the South. And the son finally told him, because he's been living honestly, he didn't get married or anything like that. And he tells his father why, that he's gay. And his father totally disowned him. Totally told him he's out of the business, he can't be part
mm-hmm.
of the family anymore. And here we are in 2012, and people are still hearing this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not just because he's 80, I think it depends on what part of the country you live in, your religious upbringing, you know, how you're taught as a person about, you know, homosexuality to start with. If people just feel, well, it's a sin, and that's all it is to it, then, you know, they're not going to be very open-minded about it. And by the way, if any have any comments about this, you can feel free to call us because we do have a call-in number, and we always like to hear other people's thoughts if you're with us tonight live. We're at 347-308-8613. I'll repeat that again. We're at area code 347-308-8613. So I don't know if the situation's ever going to change and people feeling sympathetic for us. What do you think, Misty?
I don't know if we'll ever get the awareness that we should have as a group I don't really see that happening because I see a trend moving towards just everyone being politically correct. And also, and politically correct is fine. I'm not saying people, gay, lesbians, and bisexual people don't deserve rights. That's absolutely what I am not saying. What I am saying, I see people moving towards that. And they seem to push as a result of that. It's my theory with the women I've worked with. I see a trend of straight wives getting pushed farther back into the closet, almost in a point of if they see anything, it's considered homophobic. When it's not, they need the awareness and they need the help and the mental help, the support, all that stuff. They need just as much as the gay person coming out of the closet. So I've seen a trend to where it's almost like the straight spouse is just pushed into the closet and the door shut when the gay person can come out because, once again, that's a straight spouse being considered homophobic when that's not the issue at all. It's very entangled into, you know, people don't untangle the, you know, being politically correct and homophobic and consider the circumstances. You know, it can be very different. So, you know, and it's hard to even explain for me, and I've been through it, you know, so I can't expect the general population to understand it. So I think it is difficult to understand what the straight spouse goes through and how that they are pushed back into the closet and considered almost an outcast if they do speak up or try to bring some awareness to the problem. And it's just, it's very difficult. And also bring to point, I work with several women, and including myself, I've had this comment when I went through the divorce, was, well, it really shouldn't bother you because he's gay. There's nothing you can do, so that shouldn't even be an issue. There's no chance of anything happening for you're going to get back together or, you know, it's just like, wow, so the pain should not have been there. So I see a lot of people that look at it like that, which is very cold and callous, I think, and it's very untrue on part of the straight spouse because obviously I've not had a client that's told me that they married just to be married, not married out of thinking they love the person.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of people think that there's just that there shouldn't be an emotional attachment, I suppose, because that person's gay. And they're, you know, and a lot of times, you know, that doesn't keep, that doesn't make you immune to the heartache. It actually makes it more complicated.
You know, I try to think about it a lot because I don't know what more we can do. You know, we've made this known. People now know that if they have this situation, that they're not isolated and alone like we felt when we were going through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're out there. We're public. You know, I have my website publicly. It's all the way on the top. So when people check gay husbands, you know, they find it right away. So it's not a hidden thing. I don't make it like it is. There's millions of women in this country and millions and millions and millions more around the world, you know, who are going through this. And yet, as large as it is, you just feel so isolated when you're going through it because I think that there's such a stigma that's attached to it. And, you know, people are afraid of what people are going to think. Like, we often have this discussion in our chat room about when you meet a guy and you start going out with him and you start getting serious, do you tell him that you were married to a gay man? You know, there's different thoughts on that also. What do you think, Misty?
I've seen different things happen. I've seen it happen both ways. I've seen women go into a relationship early on and tell the person. I've seen that person run like crazy. And I've seen that, you know, early on a woman tell a straight man and they be accepting of it and okay. So I've seen it happen in both ways. I
think it's a calculated risk because
I think it is. I think it is.
Some people just overcome their natural prejudices and they're thinking, oh, she was married to a gay man. She must be trans, you know, being a carrier for AIDS or herpes or, you know, other STDs. And I really do believe that, right?
Absolutely. Well, I even had a nurse to tell me one time, this has been probably 4 or 5 years ago, that, AIDS would lay dormant for like, I don't remember how many years she told me. So, I mean, there's even myths in the medical community, which is really, really sad. So you're telling someone that you're dating, it's like you said, you're taking a calculated risk. You are. I believe in honesty. I believe in honesty. There needs to be honesty. It has to be if you're going to have an authentic relationship. But you really have to you know, you got to know who the person is. You've got to stick your feelers out and say, okay, is it time to have this talk? Because that's talk is almost as serious as, you know, are we going to have children talk if you're young enough? You know, if you're of childbearing age, it's a very serious talk. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's not something, it's something to be prepared for. Be prepared for a multitude of responses from that person. Some people just take it with a grain. It's not a big deal. They'll say, oh, well, yeah, I know several people that's happened to, and it's really not a big deal. Some people.
Well, I think it's done now, not a big deal. I think back in the 1990s when AIDS was so prevalent and everybody was dying from it, then it was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I certainly, you know, saw that myself.
Right.
But, you know, once again, people were suspect that if you had a gay husband, then it was just a matter that you must have, you know, be a carrier for AIDS, and they weren't going to get involved with you.
Absolutely. And that's something I would tell any couple, whether it's straight, you know, whoever you're getting involved with, you know, to before the relationship goes to getting sexual, you really need to be blood tested. And, you know, and that's something that we both advocate strong. And that shows, I think, you know, and once you have that talk with someone, I think both parties need to go forward and have that done. If it's getting that serious, it needs to be done. That's my opinion. Because you got to remember, you know, it's not only, you know, some of the fastest growing HIV population is not in the gay community. You know, it's in different communities. So, I mean, protect yourself regardless. But, you know, when you do have that talk, and you, if you do continue to date that person, and before it gets to a sexual relationship, I strongly suggest that both parties be tested.
You know, I really think people are more careless now than they ever than they've been in a long time. Don't you think so?
I absolutely. It's scary. I think you're right. I think because it's so many people are living longer with HIV, people have. Yeah, misconception that you can look at someone and tell. You cannot. You cannot look at someone and tell. And people look very healthy. You know, in the 80s, people would just look like, I mean, like skin stretched over skeletons almost. It would just look so pitiful. And they didn't have a very long lifespan. Now that lifespan has increased due to, you know, thankfully due to different medications and, you know, more knowledge.
You can live as long as, you know, you have a better chance of surviving than diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Because people with HIV, if they take their medications and do what they're supposed to, they have a much better chance of living longer than people who are diabetics.
So, I mean, look at that. I mean, you know, you can't look at someone until they're diabetic. So, I mean, it's just really interesting how that people are just being very careless. And there's so many STDs out there. HIV is just one of them, but you know, there's it has so much potential to be fatal, especially if you don't know you have it. So it's dangerous. It really is a very dangerous situation to fool around with.
And a lot of these situations, you know, where women get STDs, I mean, they're not pleasant situations, even if they're not life-threatening, like herpes, when you have to explain to a man, you know, before you have, you know, a relationship with him. Oh, by the way, you know, I hope you don't mind, but, you know, I have herpes. I mean, I think that will turn a lot of relationships off. I mean,
yeah,
I hate, you know, because I like to think of myself as being really open-minded and understanding. But one time I, you know, this is about 20 years ago when I was dating before I met my soulmate. You know, I was going out with a bunch of different guys, and I went out with this one guy who was very nice and very enthralled with me. And before I did anything seriously with him sexually, he said to me, I do have to tell you something. He said, you know, and I hope this doesn't affect us. And then he told me he has herpes. And he said, but he knows when they're coming. He has outbreaks. He would never do anything unprotected. But guess what? I never saw him again. You know, that was just not something that I wanted to take a chance with.
Taking a huge risk.
I mean, I don't know. That was very nice of me, but I really didn't care at that point.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? If you were dating a guy and he told you this.
Wow, you're putting me on the spot.
I know.
You're good at that. You're good at that, aren't you, dear Bonnie? Absolutely. I would do. I am ashamed to say I do consider myself very open-minded as well. I do. I But I cannot say that I wouldn't do the same thing. I would probably do the same thing you did. I would have a conversation with that person. I would apologize. I hope that I would. And I don't think I would take it any farther. I'm with you. I just would not want to take that risk because it's not something you can get rid of.
I know. That's something you're really
stuck.
You have
a lifetime.
That no matter how safe somebody says they are or they're not having a breakout, I don't believe it necessarily.
I don't take that risk.
Do you agree with that, though, that men will say anything when they want sex?
Not all. I think many will. I think anybody will. You know, a man or a woman, someone wanting sex, I think they'll say anything or hide anything. Obviously, you know, diseases spread some way. You know, STDs, either someone's not being honest with someone. So I think men and women are not honest with their sexual partners. So, you know, when you end up with an STD, it's serious. I mean, some of them don't go away. And some of them can cause damage, especially if you're younger and it's your fertile years. I mean, they can, there's several that can, you can have so bad that it can keep you from having children. So, I mean, you really have to be careful with things like that. You really have to take those things into consideration.
So, now that we already discussed that, would we tell a man that we're dating, that we are married to a gay man, and then we've discussed if we had an STD, would we be honest with somebody about that? Do you think you would always be honest about it?
I surely hope that I would be. Absolutely. I think you have to be. I mean, I lived in so much fear after I got divorced of just so much fear of going to the doctor to get tested. I mean, I was a nervous wreck, afraid that I had something. And I would not want to put anybody through that. No one. I mean, if I'm going to be with someone as a partner, I need to care about them enough to be open with them and to be honest with them.
Well, that sounds really good, Misty, and in theory it is really good, but I just don't know in practicality. You know, when women fall, they fall hard for men. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them really fall hard, and they're willing to do anything to keep a man. And I think that if they would tell the truth, they would lose a man, but they're not going to tell him.
I think many people do make that decision, men and women. I just hope that I never do anything like that. I hope that I always am honest about, you know, anything involved in a relationship. I believe, you know, because, I mean, what type of relationship are you building if you start out with such great dishonesty?
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's not a relationship I want. I've had that type of relationship with my ex-husband. The whole thing was not a authentic relationship. I know what that's like.
Mm-hmm.
It was a debacle. I don't want to, you know, I expect honesty, so I need to deliver honesty. That's my thoughts on it anyway.
Well, I'm like that, too. I don't think I could do that. I mean, have something and not tell someone about it.
I don't think I could. No, because I think, that fear that I experienced.
You know, when I was younger.
You know, waiting on that test. I would get to come back. It was awful.
When I was a teenager, you know, and I lived out in California during the 60s, where everything went. You know, there wasn't anything you weren't doing back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a lot of sex, a lot of, you know, drugs, getting high, smoking joints, you know, and a lot of party things. It was a hippie generation back then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, California was so much more advanced than that than, you know, the East Coast was. And I went out there. It was like a shock to my nervous system. But back then, you know, venereal diseases, that they used to call, now they call them STDs. You know, they were running rampant. I mean, it was very unusual not to get one because sex was just so prevalent all over the place. And I remember I was down at the clinic, they used to call it the clinic, at least 3 times getting checked and treated. And they would say to you, who have you been with? They would ask you for a list because those people would have to be contacted. And, you know, back then it was kind of like a norm. Like if you didn't get a call, you would wonder maybe there's something wrong with me. You know, it was like a social acceptance kind of thing. Oh, you're going to the clinic. But, you know, then nobody even thought about it. You know, it wasn't a big deal. But then I think that people would just do stuff and they knew they had some kind of, you know, they were infected by something and they didn't care. But today I think it's a different issue. I think that people realize the, you know, great significance of having a relationship with someone and not telling them some kind of information like that. Mm-hmm. It's really unconscionable. And, you know, to make somebody else sick with your disease. So I'd like to see that people are doing a little better in that area as far as being honest. But I don't know.
I don't know either. It would be interesting. I wonder what the rate, if the testing rate is going up, you know, for individuals and couples before that they do have sexual relationships. And I wonder if, you know, I'm sure that's studied somewhere. That'd be interesting. I'll have to look into that and see if I can find any research on that. It'd be interesting to see what the trend on that.
When you go for a marriage license, don't you have to get your blood tested?
Not when I was married. That was in, the 90s. Mm-mm. I didn't have to have one. I think it depends on the state.
I know in this state, yeah, to get tested because they were looking for AIDS before you got married.
Wow.
I mean, I'm going back to the 1990s. I don't know what they do now. Now they may not require you to do it, but I think they are looking for STDs.
I have no idea.
Well, they're not. They should. I think that would be a really good idea, don't you?
I do, too, but then there's also, you know, by the time you get your marriage license, I mean, how many couples have already had sex? It's a little bit, you know, the horse is already out of the barn, so to speak, I would think. But, you know, it may help some couples. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Well, I always say to women, if you think that you've been compromised in any way, you need to get checked.
Mm-hmm.
So it's getting checked and catching things early is really a way to getting them resolved.
Absolutely.
And I also believe that, you know, women should try to get some kind of sexual experience before they get married. Because, you know, if you have a guy who just can't perform with you or isn't up to your standards, you know, this is always going to be an issue. It doesn't go away. Right?
I think you're right.
I don't think men get better. I mean, you know, I'm not saying they can't try different stuff, but I think you either have the technique or you don't. And a woman has to know what she's walking into. And a lot of these guys who are sexual duds, you know, they're counting on your inexperience and your refusal to do anything before you get married as the basis of them not having to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I read one lady sent me a letter this week. She said, you know, prior to the time of her marriage, they would fool around. Then after she said, I do, that was the end of the fooling around for the next, you know, not on their honeymoon, not when they got home. It was always some problem or another problem, you know, and she said that was the end of their sex life is when, you know, they got married.
Wow.
So there's no guarantee, but at least I think you have a better feeling for if there is something wrong with someone. But I still don't know. I still say that people all have to make their own mistakes. Don't you think so? Mistake? Like, do we really learn from other people's mistakes?
You know, it's such a good question. I don't know if we do learn much from other people's mistakes. I know I learn best from creating my own mistakes and learning from that. I call it my little life lessons. Some have been harder than others. The marriage to a gay man was quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, it was beyond a life lesson. It was multiple life lessons that I learned. So, you know, sometimes experience is the hardest teacher, but it will certainly teach you. Experience will certainly teach you.
Absolutely. And I think that's the best way people learn because just telling people stuff, you know, they just don't believe it or they don't relate to it or they think you're overreacting to it. You know, it's really, I think you have to just live it.
You have to live it. You have to be ready for what you need to hear. You know, as they say, a teacher will always appear when the student's ready. So, you know, when you're ready for something, and to hear it, I think you'll hear it. But until then, you know, there's a lesson there. Unfortunately, you may have to learn it to experience the hard way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to bring up tonight, about, since it is Mother's Day, to give a tribute to so many of the mothers who are now single parents. And, you know, I just wanted to give you a little statistics on that and how that goes for single parents. It was really kind of interesting to see the number of single parents that there are in this country. And so I did a little check, and I found out that here it says that there's 21.8 million children that are being raised in a single-parent home.
Wow.
So that's a lot, right?
It's a lot of children.
21.8 million. That's approximately 26% of the children under 20. So about a little more than a quarter of the children are being raised in single-family homes. And it does say that the typical single parent is a mother. Approximately 84% of custodial parents are mothers, and 16% of the custodial parents are fathers. And it says that, you know, she is divorced or separated. Of the mothers who are custodial parents, 45% are currently divorced or separated. And so, you know, that's the majority there. And let's see what other statistics it gives us. 79% of the custodial single mothers are gainfully employed. 27% of custodial single mothers and their children live in poverty. But that means almost, you know, 62% don't. And the average age is around 40 years old. So those are the things that I learned about single parents today. But, of course, you know, raising children on your own is always difficult. And I think a lot of the reasons that women stay in marriages is because they're so afraid of how they're going to be able to cope, you know, if they're on their own as a single parent. By the way, I think we do have a caller with us. So hold on 1 second, Missy, we can get some feedback.
Okay.
Hello, this is Bonnie. Hello? Do we have a caller today? Okay, well, maybe it's not a caller who's calling in. Maybe it's just a caller who's listening. But if you want to join in with us, feel free to do so. So, so those were the statistics. And, you know, I think it is very scary having to face single motherhood alone. And I'm really focusing my, you know, newsletter on that because none of us really expect when we're, you know, going to get married and we love our husbands and we're going to have a family that someday is going to be a family where we're raising the children by ourselves. That's never the contention that, you know, we have when we go into these marriages. And yet, you know, so many of our women end up doing exactly that. And I think it takes, a lot of courage to be able to do this. I mean, I think it's so hard being a single parent. And especially if you've been devoting your life primarily to parenting the children. And a lot of times women have to now first get back into the workforce. They have to get jobs. They have to handle the bills and the expenses. You know, it's a whole new way of living for people. And, you know, it's very frightening to women who now have the responsibility of doing everything by themselves. Do you run across that too, Misty?
Absolutely. It is. You know, especially when oftentimes, with many of the women I've worked with, they have left the workforce to be a stay-at-home mom. And that's one of the hardest jobs you'll ever have as a stay-at-home mom. I mean, you know, when you're home, there's always more to do. And then they, you know, so their resume is not full. I mean, there's blanks in it. So unfortunately, many employers frown upon that sometimes, you know, well, where was you employed from here to here? You know, especially when you're a stay-at-home mom, it's such a difficult job to do. And, you know, being out of the workforce, raising your children because that's what you thought your happy little marriage was going to be, you know, someone going to work, someone going to raise the family, then possibly go back to work after, you know, the children are a certain age. And it doesn't always work out like that. It's very scary for the women that have completely left the workforce, and I can understand that. You know, it's scary when, you know, you've got both feet out the door and you don't have any connections in. But there's always, where there's a will, there is a way. And you know that better than anyone, Bonnie. You've certainly pulled yourself up through, you know, through the situation, come out a shining star. So, you know, where there's a will, there is a way. And it's not always easy.
Right. You have to realize that even if you have the will, sometimes it really takes time to find your way because, you know, so many variables, you know, the children, what ages they are, you know, what kind of jobs you can get. You know, we have women who are totally financially dependent on their husbands because they have been stay-at-home mothers, you know, making a good life for the family, you know, making sure the children, you know, some of these children are even homeschooled. I mean, you have all kinds of variations here. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily equip you for having a job on the outside.
Right.
And now people find that, you know, women find they have to be responsible in some way financially for their own, you know, success in life. You know, they have to chip into the bills, and what are they going to do? So I think it's not just being a single mom that's so scary, but also now the financial aspect of it, that now you can't depend on anybody but yourself, and you're going to have to go work. And you don't have skills and you don't have training. You know, there's a lot of women in that situation. And I think it is scary for them.
It's very scary, you know, to reenter the workforce when you've been gone or possibly have never been in the workforce, you know, since the marriage. I mean, there's all sorts of different situations and scenarios of women we've worked with. And it's any time that your life has been turned upside down and you have to start all over, it's scary. And this is certainly one of those situations. And it can be even more complicated when you've got little children involved. So it's not only your mouth you have to feed and a roof that you have to cover. You know, have little children that you have to do the same for. And especially if you're the primary caregiver of those children. So you've got to make sure that those children are clothed, they're fed, they're educated. There's so many things that go along with it. And, you know, they have to, if they're young, they have to have child care while you're doing your employment. So there's just, it's a lot of things to work out. It's doable, but, you know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
It is. And, you know, what I'm writing in my newsletter is that as much and as horrible as it is, I would have chosen that any day of the week than continuing to live in a marriage that was a disaster. I mean, my marriage was a disaster, and every day I woke up thinking, how do I get out of this? And I wasn't strong enough because at that point, you know, so mentally beaten down from trying to be my own detective day and night. My ex-husband was so unhappy, and he felt I was trying to keep him, you know, stuck in, you know, not do things. But, I mean, he wanted to run, and I wanted him to stay home. So I always became the one who was wrong. But my point is that as scary as it was still better than living on eggshells with a man who's emotionally abusive, and in some cases, like yours, Misty, physically abusive, right?
Yes, yeah. It was, my life was in danger. I should have left many years before I did. I didn't. That's a good example of, you were talking earlier, do people learn from other people's experience? I'm a very good example of, at that point in time, no. I didn't listen to other people's experience. I did finally get out. But, yes, it was a very dangerous situation. And I didn't have children to feed, clothes. I didn't have a financial concern. It was still hard. It was still hard to break into marriage. It really was. So it's not easy. You know, I'm 12 years out of it, and I do. Sometimes I forget how difficult those days were. Thankfully, I do. Thankfully, the body has a way and the mind has a way to forget some of those horrible things in a good way. So, you know, sometimes I forget the difficulty of those days. And it wasn't easy, and I didn't have little children to try to pull out of it. So it's not easy, but it was, oh, my goodness, it was so worth it. I say to this day, my only regret is I didn't do it sooner. That's the only regret I have. It should have been done sooner.
I like to reiterate that because, you know, you're still at an advantage of not having children when you left your marriage. But I was at the disadvantage of having two babies when my marriage split up. You know, they were 2.5 and 3 months old. And
wow.
Life was horrible. I'm not going to mislead you into thinking it was fun. It wasn't. you know, I was paralyzed in the beginning. I had no money. I had no food. I had nothing but two little babies. And, you know, the only thing I had was that my sanity was quickly coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, many a night, you know, it's a shame that your mental state gets so bad like mine was. You know, I was having suicidal thoughts and I was having homicidal thoughts. You know, I just didn't see a way out of that marriage. You know, my ex-husband did me the biggest favor when he took a suitcase and said, I'm leaving.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he didn't do it for the right reason, but I didn't care. You know, he said, I'm
right.
leaving. You know, I don't want you snooping through my things and you can't tell me how to live. You know, like pressuring me. But once he was gone for that week, I felt I gained my strength back. So that
mm-hmm.
when he came to the door to say he's back, I could say, no, you're not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
You left. And that's the way it is.
Yeah.
I was able to save myself. And even
mm-hmm.
though at that point I only had a GED, I didn't have any college behind me. I was a high school dropout. I just had equivalency diploma. And yet I was able to sneak to college, you know, because back then you weren't allowed to go. I was on public assistance for 3 years. And I used to, you know, go under the radar and sneak to school. I would pay my own babysitters and, you know, take out whatever loans I needed to get through it. I stayed on there for 3 years until I figured out that, you know, I got my education. I would never have to go back to doing that again. And even though it was really tight, you know, I was reminded of it this past weekend when my nephew said to me he's going to a thrift shop to look for clothes. And he likes the clothes in the thrift shop because sometimes you get really great deals there. He just turned 18. And he said, why do you have to pay like $40 for a shirt when I can get them there for $5?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of them are pretty, you know, nice shirts. But, you know, they weren't worn or barely worn. But, you know, like I say, it was hard living like that all the time. And yet, as bad as it was better than living under that mental stress and strain. And that's my whole thing that I tell women. It's better to be on your own and to have your own freedom to think straight than it is to be living with a man who can never be a real husband to you and who resents the fact that you're even there. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. I had so much stress and apprehension before filing for divorce. I mean, I was ready to back out 15 times before I finally went to the attorney's office. I was just so afraid, had so much fear. Everything was wrapped up in fear. And some wonderful, wonderful people supporting me, my friends, and my family, mostly my family. My family was just doing, I have to say, I lucked out. I hadn't told my family anything until the night before I was ready to file for divorce. And they really just stepped up to the plate, just did an amazing job. And I just had so much apprehension. I remember the night before thinking, wow, maybe I shouldn't do this. This isn't, maybe it's not, maybe I didn't do enough. I mean, I was still dancing inside that circle of insanity.
Uh-huh.
And the night before. And finally, I just had like a reality check. I think it was my mother. She said, are you serious? You're crazy. You know, you can't put up with that. After I had finally told them, and my cousin was saying the same thing. And I said, you know what? They're right. So, you know, you have those moments where you question yourself and you doubt yourself because, you know, I doubted myself for 12 years in this marriage, you know, 12 years in the relationship, married 10 together, almost two. So, you know, that's a lot of years to doubt yourself. So, anyway, the moment that I signed those papers, I knew I had done the right thing. I mean, it was the best thing I have ever. That's the best thing I've done for myself in my life.
Yeah, standing up for yourself is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it shows that you still care enough about yourself to save yourself. You
mm-hmm.
know, otherwise your personality just gets beaten down more and more so that you don't have a personality anymore. You don't have an ego. Everything's been taken away from you. And believe me, I understand it. I lived like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was only, you know, through an act of God, I believe, that my ex-husband walked out because he was mad at me. And I just knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that week to regather myself and to stand up for myself like you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had some time away. My dad was in like a near-fatal car accident, and my family needed help, and my parents had always been there for me. So I went back home to where I was from, which was just a few hours away from where I was living with the now ex-husband. And, excuse me, being away a short period of time, I knew I had to get out. Because just that break from that insanity, I knew it was crazy. I thought, oh, my goodness, what am I putting up with? You know, and I would vacillate. I'd still have those moments of thinking, oh, well, this will work. But those moments got fewer and fewer and fewer, you know. But it was, like I said, and I'll say it again, my biggest regret is I didn't do it sooner. I should have done it much sooner.
I know. I think we linger in these marriages full of hope that something's going to change. When you have to recognize that nothing is going to change, except it's going to get worse.
Hey,
he's not
changing.
He's going to try to change you.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's not necessarily a good thing, because you're doing it through eyes of distortion, because your gay husband, that's eyes of distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll know what's best for you and how you should dress and how you should look. Well, he's not a straight man. How does he know this?
Right. Fine.
You can go ahead now, Missy.
It's such a difficult situation, and you know, it's not always. You know, you question yourself. Those questions are there, and that's natural and that's normal. I just always suggest to people get some good help, get some good support, and someone that you trust with your life, as in support. You know, to throw questions to ask questions to, and sometimes it has to be professional help if you don't have family or friends that can support you in that manner. You know, there's some great professionals out there.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just because someone's a professional doesn't mean they're the right one for you. If it's not a good fit, go to the next one. So, you know, it may take some searching, but get some support.
Well, I think we're going to wrap up our show tonight because it is a special day for many women, so we don't want to tie you up with our show. But we wanted to wish all of our mothers who are either single mothers or becoming single mothers a happy holiday. And, you know, the happiness has to be found within your children, because you won't find a lot of it within your marriage or former marriage. But that's okay. You know, like I say, your children are the best things that came out of your marriage, as you always say. Take advantage of spending extra time with them, and, you know, feel proud that you're being a role model to them, because, you know, when you get out of these marriages, you are a role model, showing you're not going to accept poor treatment in life or treatment that's not worth up to your standards. So, Misty, do you have anything else you'd like to say?
I think that was beautiful. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and live your life. It's worth it, that's for sure. It's worth it. It's the best thing I've done for myself. Life is good. Life is good.
Okay. Well, that sounds good to me. So on behalf of Misty and me, we'd like to wish all of our callers a really happy week, no matter where you're listening from the United Kingdom, from Australia, from South America, or from the good old USA. And we will be back here again with you next week. And Misty, I hope you have a wonderful week.
You too, Bonnie.
All right, you know, I love you.
Love you. Good night and love to all.
Yep, good night to all. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.